Welcome to Net Tonight with Elliott Price. Brought to you by Ye Olde Orchard Pub.
There's a lead pass. In on goal, McDavid scores! 3-1 Canada!
Here's the 1-2 pitch from Martinez. Ball hit out into center field, going back. Marquise Grissom, he's got it! Dennis Martinez has pitched a perfect game!
There's a shot! They score!
The 2-1 pitch. Cordero swings. Base hit. The Expos will win. The Expos will win. Cordero with a base hit to win the ball game in the bottom of the ninth inning.
The drought is over. Drink it in, Canada. World champions.
It's Elliott. Elliott for the touchdown.
And now here's your host, Elliott Price.
So even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Yeah. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification. One day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. A dream that one day every valley shall be exalted, and every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, 'tis of thee." Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. And so let freedom ring from the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire. Let freedom ring from the mighty mountains of New York. Let freedom ring from the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania. Let freedom ring from the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado. Let freedom ring from the crevaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last.
Martin Luther King Day, and just 3 hours and 53 minutes left. Good luck, America. Welcome to the show. I'm Elliot Price. That's the dejected Grant Robinson, and now we have all felt the pain. Our National Football League roundtable, consisting of Cowboys and Giants and Raiders, and at least the Cowboys and the Giants will be back in the same stadium next year. I don't know what else to say. Cowboys go down to the Packers, and
it was just so, like, it's always like that for me, too, with my teams.
You know what happened here? The moment that Skip Bayless crapped all over Aaron Rodgers is when you were doomed.
I mean, I refuse to give Skip Bayless any power here. You know who bugs me? Stephen A. Smith, coming in all season, he's been talking about how the Cowboys are going to lose every game. They've won consistently. And then he comes in today, he's like, I told you all, America, like, you said nothing. You were wrong eight times. You know what I mean? You've been right. Like, you pretty much picked the field against a team that was not supposed to make the playoffs. In the end, it's tough to lose like that. But I've told you this since we started the show, what I always tell you, remember we used to talk about the Leafs blowing that lead to Boston? I told you I would rather lose in a heartbreaking way like that, where your team actually shows up, than to get blown out. And early in that first quarter, what it looked like, 21-3, you know, at least the Cowboys showed up. They showed some heart. They gave it they had a chance. Just, you remember when it used to be 2 minutes was too much time for a quarterback? It's like, ooh, they got 2 minutes and two timeouts. It might be enough time. Now it's like 35 seconds, and you know you're screwed.
You know what's going to be worse for you? When you listen to Aaron Rodgers, and he'll tell you they left too much time on the clock.
Ouch. I tweeted out, run the ball, and it was third and three.
What if that guy never catches another pass in the entire history of his career?
Oh, Jared Cook. Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought you were talking about a Cowboys play. Yeah, that was.
Did you see the replay?
Because you retweeted it. Aaron Rodgers' feet. I like that. That was nice. I saw that actually maybe an hour ago, but only because you retweeted it.
Unbelievable. Good stuff. All right. Lots to talk about, including, what did I say? You asked me, which team? Which team in the NHL? And I said Washington. Man, they are unbeatable right now. What are we looking at? A Washington-Minnesota Stanley Cup final?
I wouldn't complain. Minnesota's been fun to watch. Look, they might not have the stars that you'd expect, you know, the big names, but, well, they do, but they're not the guys producing, right? It's not necessarily Zach Parise that's killing it. It's their young guys.
The Hawks, of course, had a 2-0 lead on Minnesota, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Minnesota came back, won the game. And so I tweeted to my good buddy Blair McAsee. I went, okay, bud, that's quite enough. He writes back, have to stop the Hawks. They don't have enough fingers for all their rings. Time for them to play nice and share.
There you go. Maybe it is.
Hope all is well. How could it be well? Blair.
I mean, the Blackhawks, are they still in first?
No, Minnesota's.
They got, oh, so that was a big game then.
Not as big as Dallas.
Oh, we're going Green back Bay. There. Eh? Well, we're started. Going back there.
All right. National Football League, we'll do that with Daniel Kalis. We'll talk Canadians. Sorry I missed it. It's like the first Canadians game I missed in like forever. And it was at Miles' basketball game, and what they almost got a goal, I hear.
Almost.
1-0. I heard it was the worst game of the year, since the last worst game of the year. And coming up, Todd Alushko is back from Vegas. That's where he was last week. That's why he couldn't come on. He was in Vegas. We'll ask him what he did there. And, of course, the Leafs. You would easily give up this Cowboy win.
I made a
win.
Deal.
Is it just,
ask Dana,
just
I made a deal.
To make the playoffs?
Well, my
okay,
deal
hold
was.
That thought. You're going to have to hold that thought.
Good.
We'll be back. We got the opening face-off coming up. This is Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price.
You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price. Tackling the latest headlines and the hottest topics, it's time for the opening face-off with Elliot Price and Grant Robinson.
NFL divisional round, obviously four big matchups. I mean, Texans maybe not, but it's still the Patriots, and it was close at halftime. We could start kind of wherever because I have questions for all of them, but what was your favorite game out of them? I mean, I know what mine was the best game, but that doesn't
Dallas
mean it was yours.
Green Bay was a great game. Kansas City, Pittsburgh, too. I mean, how could the Saturday games be the best games when they weren't good games?
Yeah, no, I agree. The Saturday games were a little bit.
Tell you what,
whatever.
Much like the Raiders against Houston, dudes, catch the ball. Catch the ball.
I agree 100%.
Osweiler put two balls in the end zone, in the hands, long pass, and a ball off the hands of, what's his name? Federer. And he didn't catch the ball.
Fedorowicz and Fuller.
He caught the third touchdown, but he had two passes already. Your quarterback is not as good as the other guy. He's not even in his league. And for you to have a chance when he throws you a ball and you're alone, catch a damn thing.
Yeah, Fuller. Will Fuller was one of my favorite players in our game. He was so clutch. He caught those every time.
Houston,
didn't catch it
with
this
their
time.
Defense, they made Brady uncomfortable. I told you that they would make him uncomfortable. But your quarterback has to be caught when he throws the ball correctly. And they didn't. They didn't help him out.
Well, look, I'll go here. You said Dallas Green Bay was maybe the most entertaining.
It's one of the best games, you know.
So what did you think of the Dallas Green Bay game? You know, turning point, things you noticed, impressed by, and anything. You can really go anywhere you want with this. I got a million thoughts on it, obviously.
Absolutely. But I mean, it was a little more acute for you. not cute, I might add.
Acute. Yeah, definitely not cute.
What? I really thought the field goal was going left, and so as you'll hear,
and the first one was almost right.
Mason Crosby also thought it was bending left, and then it just took a little turn to the right.
350 yard, because he still hit the one that they called the timeout on, right?
It's one of the greatest catches
yards.
Of all time.
Yeah, and the throw, look, it's not a Hail Mary,
but it is.
It was a Hail Mary type play.
Yeah.
He buys the time the same way you see him do it. I know a lot of Cowboys fans were all over Twitter talking about there's a hold. And yes, you can see it, but there's a million holds in a football game. You know what I mean? You didn't call it at the time. It's not, they're not going to call that. Just like Randall Cobb maybe pushed off against the Giants on that Hail Mary. They don't call that on those plays. Exactly. You can't beg for a call.
Apparently they call holding
on a
2-point conversion at the end of a Kansas City Pittsburgh game.
I saw that. What I don't like, I'll tell you right now, the one where Green Bay kicked that first field goal to go up by 3 and they called pass interference on the Cowboys DB.
Yeah.
He kind of puts his hand on him. Now, I'm fine with defensive holding, illegal contact. You cannot pass interfere when the quarterback still has the ball in his hand.
But here's the thing, okay? You know Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
You never, ever spike the ball to stop the clock.
Well, they spiked it. And look, the spike I'm fine with because you have 3 other plays.
Saving a timeout.
You have 3 other plays. I'm fine with it.
Never.
Where I don't like it, 3rd and 3, 35 seconds left.
Yep.
You're already in field goal range and you have a timeout.
Yep.
Run it with Ezekiel Elliott. If you get the first down, you spike it then.
Right.
You got 20 seconds left.
Yep.
You go for the end zone. You don't get it. You're closer. But as soon as they throw it and he knocks it down, I said, that is...
That's too much.
I'm excited that they got there.
I understand the quarterback's Aaron Rodgers, but if it was Peyton Manning, if it was Tom Brady, if it was, it was any tough. Number of guys, the greats, you cannot leave time on the clock. Joe Montana, they'll beat you. You can't do that. You got to take the clock down to nothing and take your chances. That's the only way.
I agree. And look, worst call of the game, second and one, best O-line in the league, top running back, and you throw a screen pass. And Dak Prescott, I love what he did in the rest of the game. But you look, Micah Hyde, it's kind of like the Seahawks-Patriots, right? At the goal line, the guy reads the play, he jumps. But this one, he was there before you threw it. You threw it right into his gut.
Dude, now wait a minute, okay? It was the same play that the Raiders ran the first time they had the ball against Houston. I'm going, what are you doing? Are you doing? That was the interception.
What are you doing? Hindsight's 20/20, right?
It's a stupid play, okay?
Risky
for
nothing.
There's way too much. Well, first of all, risk and reward, okay? The reward is what? 4 yards?
How many times has Ezekiel Elliott stopped, right?
Yeah. Okay, so...
Dez Bryant made the tackle. We're lucky.
Look,
the other thing I'll say, I was very impressed with the team. Look, down 21-3, could have easily laid down. They come back 15 points in the fourth quarter. I love it. But just the amount of things that had to go the Packers' way at the end. Montgomery screen pass, tackled at the line of scrimmage, breaks it, 16 yards. Aaron Rodgers holding on to that ball.
They lost the game, but they left Dak in. And so now Tony Romo can go quarterback somewhere else.
They made the right decision.
Absolutely.
I agree with that.
This was for your future.
He got you there.
This is going to be a good team. I feel the same way about the Raiders.
And Aaron Rodgers, everybody's going to talk about the Hail Mary. Yeah. I think holding on to that ball when he gets sacked, and he never even senses it whatsoever, that shows what he is. He's great. And this is where I kind of want to go here. Jason Garrett at the end of the game said Aaron Rodgers is a top, not a quarterback. He said he is one of the three best players to ever lace them up in this league. Now, that's big accolades. Where do you see Aaron Rodgers? Because I'll be honest, for me, I've said this for years.
I know.
He's the best quarterback I've ever watched play.
But you know what? I've seen Peyton Manning do what he does. And I've seen Joe Montana do what he does. And I've seen Tom Brady do what he does. We saw it yesterday. It's very fresh in our minds. He does this over and over again. But so did they. Bottom line is, he's got one Super Bowl.
And I think that's why he's not in the conversation.
But he is. That's the whole thing. He wouldn't let Peyton Manning in because he only had one Super Bowl. It's not his fault that there. You know what?
There's so many factors.
Dan Fouts was as good a quarterback as I've seen in the National Football League, but they didn't give him a defense or they didn't give him a running game. Dan Marino never won a Super Bowl because they didn't give him a defense or they didn't give him a running game. And so you have to be, it's a 53-man game. You have to be surrounded by talent. If you don't have an offensive line and you got rushing and receiving, you're going to get the hell beat out of you. It is a team game, the National Football League. As good as your quarterback is, there are other good quarterbacks in the league. And so right now, Aaron Rodgers is the best quarterback in the National Football League.
I think he's the Mr. Like, if I had a Mr. Potato Head with all quarterback skills, he's what I make. Like, he has...
Right now, you don't want a Mr. Potato Head him. You want to stick pins in him, you know?
I still like the guy, but look, I hate when he plays my team, but look, best QB rating of all time. It's not even close. His TD to interception ratio is 4.1 to 1.
I'll give you games 1 to 14 this year in the National Football League, and Derek Carr was as good as anybody.
I agree.
Fourth quarter coming out of nowhere, and we'll see what he has in him as far as championships are concerned. And they have an offensive line that can protect him if they can stay healthy. You know, you're only as good as the guys that surround you. And we'll see what the Packers can do now. I mean, you know,
I just think he deserves, like, if he wins this Super Bowl, because I agree, you need to be in the conversation. If he does, I think he passes Peyton.
I see. So Peyton's in the conversation now because he won a Super Bowl he didn't deserve.
Peyton broke all the records and had one. Right. And I agree, Peyton never really had it. I just think Rodgers, man, like I said, 4 touchdowns to an interception. Nobody else in the history of the NFL, including all these guys, is over 3. It's not even close. And,
but are we still on question 1 here?
No, this is like 3. We're already there. Right. Last 4 teams remain.
Yes.
They're maybe not the top 4 teams, but right now they are.
Of course they're the top 4 teams.
And they're there.
They're there.
So it's not Seattle. But looking at
Thank
the first
God.
2 rounds of these playoffs, okay?
Yes.
Which team needs to make a change the most? Either to get to the next level or to get back to where they were, which team do you see, like, if you don't make a change, forget it, there's no chance?
Houston needs a quarterback.
It's Houston, Texas. It's not even a question.
If you're a Houston fan, to see the kind of defense, because those defenses win championships if you have any semblance of a quarterback whatsoever. Again, he didn't have a terrible day yesterday. He wasn't helped out, but in the end, he's who he is. And maybe he gets better. I doubt it.
I agree. I don't have any faith.
But, you know, he's essentially a rookie quarterback, and
yeah,
he wasn't
going
to win a championship this year.
I'll say this. Look, you said top defense in the league. Those stats sometimes are misleading. Look what they did to Tom Brady yesterday. Tom Brady looked average. I mean, under 300 yards, 47% completion, and he threw as many interceptions yesterday as he did all year.
This isn't going on forever.
And this is to me where the proof is. You force three turnovers on the Patriots. You do a goal line stand at the one, first and goal at the one, and you stuff them. And then three turnovers. This is Houston's starting field position. New England 27, which was only a 27-yard field goal they got. The New England 12-yard line and the 34-yard line in New England. That's 13 points they got. They only got three other than that. So to me, I know you said the drop, that hurt. But Brock Osweiler, like, the Patriots are not going to get stopped like this often. You had that dream day defensively, and you weren't even close because you don't have the quarterback. Go out, get one. Moving away from football quickly, Jose Bautista. So finally some news for the Blue Jays. They're saying it's very close. So we'll say potentially for now. Do you like the move?
Well, we've talked about this already. I mean,
but did the offseason change? Because at the beginning, both of us had said,
no.
Maybe stay away.
Stay away from what?
From Bautista. We wanted Encarnacion.
But they didn't get Encarnacion.
Yep.
I mean, you have to get what you can get. You make your team the best that you can make it. Right now, the Toronto Blue Jays, we're looking at no corner outfielders. You can't play with seven players. It doesn't work.
You need one, yeah.
I was looking at Ezekiel Carrera, right? I mean, he's 30 years old. He's got a lifetime on-base percentage of like 320 or something.
Yeah,
he's not a major league full-time player. Whatever you saw in small gaps last year, he's not the guy, okay? Melvin Upton Jr. strikes out a zillion times. His on-base percentage is even lower. He'll pop a few home runs, but he doesn't get on base enough to keep turning that offense around. Jose Bautista not only hits home runs, he gets on base.
Yeah, he walks a lot. He's good.
You turn that batting... So when you're looking like on January 16th and you're going, what's the best available outfielder? Jose Bautista. Sign him. He wants to play for you.
Your fans like him.
Sign him.
I agree 100%.
He may not have been my first choice when you're talking about who's got money and what do I want to do with my team. But that's what's available right now. You're going to end up with lesser. So sign him.
And for me, the key where I knew I needed the Blue Jays to sign him, and I know this sounds stupid, but when Cleveland said they were interested in Bautista, if I had to see Cleveland have Encarnacion and Bautista, I would have lost it.
You have to be accurate in what you say, okay? Cleveland didn't say they were interested.
Well, there was rumors. Somebody said that.
Yeah, well, where do you think that came from?
I don't know, but I'm just glad
that's not happening.
Where do you think that came from? Bautista's agent?
There you go.
All right. But I'm just saying, when I saw that, I was like, no, you go sign him right now, because I will not stand for that.
That's where this stuff always comes from. That's how Encarnacion got his contract in Cleveland. There's always somebody.
The opening faceoff with Elliott Price and Grant Robinson.
Saturday. It's going to be a good day. Always is. It's because of all the games during the week. The one played on Saturday night is a special one. This is the story of a love affair between a country and a game. If you want to try and teach someone about Canada, you go to the television Saturday night and it becomes crystal clear. Hockey Night in Canada on CBC and Sportsnet.
Truck and Roll moves concerts, some big name bands all over North America. But Truck and Roll also serves some you've never heard of. Big and small, they take the same painstaking care. Trade shows, theater shows, concert events, experienced drivers ensuring timely delivery and professional service. Because the show must go on. And that can't happen if whatever you need to be there doesn't get there when you need it. Call Truck and Roll, 514-421-0045, on the net at truckandroll.com and on Facebook. Truck and Roll delivers on their promise and on time. There's a lot of moving parts. Call the experts to assure that your complex ground transportation logistics are handled by those who know what they're doing. Because every second counts. We cover Canada and the United States. Call Truck and Roll, 514-421-0045. On the net at truckandroll.com and on Facebook.
You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price and Grant Robinson.
All right, welcome to the Voices portion of our program. Coming up just after Grant's update at 8:30, he'll get you up to date on all the scores. We'll talk to Eric Engels about the Canadians and some of their lineup maneuvers. McCarron out in his hometown. Is that a good move? And is he heading out? Out. We'll find out with Eric Engels coming up just after 8:30. Meanwhile, the voices of the day, and one of them belongs to a Montrealer. Hey, how about Jeannie? 6-love, 6-4 in her first match in the Aussie.
Yeah, Jeannie, congratulations round. 18 minutes for the opening set. That's certainly a way to start a Grand Slam.
Thank you. Yeah, after waiting so long for the men's match, I tried to make it quick for you guys.
You've also been waiting a while to get back into this sort of form as well. You had a great lead up in Sydney. What have you done differently to get into this Australian summer?
I really worked hard in the off season and really found my motivation. And, I think I improved a couple of things in my game and feel very energetic on the court. And that helps me play better. So, just want to keep going. There's still a long road ahead.
Certainly plenty of energy tonight. Did you also appreciate all the support in here?
Of course. Thank you guys for staying up so late. And obviously the Jeannie Army. Nice to see you guys. I'll take you out for drinks later.
Well, congratulations. You need to get away and get some rest. You're into the second round. Good luck with it. Eugenie Bouchard.
Okay, she's not the best, eh? And I'll take you out for drinks later. Jeannie Army. Good on her. And she looked good today, tennis-wise, I say. 6-love, 6-4. 18 minutes for the 6-love. All right. Next, and we might as well take care of this Toronto Blue Jays thing and Jose Bautista. Now, I'm going to remind you of where we were last week. This is Monday the 16th. So, last Wednesday, all right, who did we have? Oh, it was John Heyman, right, from MLB.com. And here was his comments about the chances for the Blue Jays and Bautista getting together.
They hope he signed somewhere else is what I think is going on. And, they're monitoring the situation. I guess if they can get some kind of unbelievable deal, if he says to himself, well, I got all these business dealings in Toronto. I love playing there. I want to come back. Is it possible that they sign him back for something less than that 17-2? They're not going to pay more than the 17-2. I guess there's always that remote possibility, but I think they're going to play it out and hope for that draft choice.
But John, have you heard anything from anyone that would suggest that they want him back?
No.
Wrong! All right, here's the president and CEO on also with Blair and Brunt on The Fan in Toronto on Friday.
No, I mean, I would just say that, we clearly need a corner outfielder, right? And Jose is probably the most talented one out there as far as offensive production goes and pedigree and track record. And then on top of that, he's got a premium in this marketplace because of, what he's meant to this franchise over the last 8 seasons and who he is in this market and the impact he's made in the community here. So you take all those things up, and for me not to say he would be a good alternative for us for next year would be a mistake. So, I mean, I think he's among the alternatives. He's certainly, if not the best, one of the best.
So don't believe anything you ever hear ever, right? Remember the Orioles? No, our fans don't like him, so we're not interested. And then all of a sudden, they lost their guy, running out of people. Now all of a sudden, they're interested again. All the Blue Jays are not interested until they're interested. And then last night, all of a sudden, there was news that the Blue Jays and Bautista were close to a contract. Shai Davidi covers the Blue Jays for Sportsnet.
Sorting through the final details, trying to figure out which structure is going to make the most sense for them and how it's going to work. But it is a really intriguing contract on a number of levels for both sides. It hasn't been the off season that either side has particularly wanted or hoped for, and now the seemingly bringing them back together.
No more. No, I ain't gonna on Maggie's farm no more.
There you go. Bob Dylan. Ain't gonna work on Maggie's farm no more. Yes, you are. And we're going to pay you $18 million. Or in that neighborhood. Jose Bautista, they say it's possibility of a two-year contract. We'll see on that. I don't know, maybe a year and an option. I don't know. But they're working on it. And now it's like running into 24 hours. They've been working on it. So this runs on long enough. All of a sudden, you'll get some announcement that, yeah, Cleveland has signed him. So get her done, baby. All right, update coming up. The best team in the NHL, not so much. What the hell happened? Grant turned his back, and the Washington Capitals blew it.
It's our team's battling it out. I like it.
Unbelievable! He'll get you an update on that, and then we'll talk to Eric Engels about the Habs and hockey and life. This is Sportsnet Tonight. I'm Elliot Price. That's Grant Robinson, and you're listening to CFMB 1280 AM in Montreal.
Elliot. Price.
I'm supposed to be the franchise player.
Elliot.
I bet you slice into the woods $100. I never slice.
Come on, Elliot. I meant to do that.
I'm charting your general direction.
Elliot.
Price.
You rocket!
You're tuned in to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price.
C'est moi ici qui est responsable.
Here on 1280 AM, Montreal.
It's understanding that makes it possible for people like us to tolerate a person like yourself.
Price!
You know, Elliot, you were right.
It's not a lie if you believe it.
Now, Sportsnet Tonight. Talking hockey. You know, the home team in red, white, and blue.
Time for Eric Engels. It's our once-a-week get-together. How are you, Eric?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm all right. Where you been in the last week? Anywhere or just home?
I've been around, mostly here at home. And the Canadians have obviously been all over the place. And with them calling practice on Sunday, there's a bit of extra work to do this week.
Yeah, poor you. Hey, I had to get out there and watch a hockey practice and everything. Man.
In fact, you know, I think if there was one guy who really benefited from that decision that Michel Therrien made to move their flight back to 7 o'clock at night and have a practice at noon, it was Carey Price. And it's funny, you know, like all the other guys, that routine doesn't matter quite as much as it does for a goaltender. And Price has talked at length in the past about how all of his preparation and visualization happens in practice and in the moments that he spends with Stefan Waite. And the Canadians haven't been able to do any of that stuff for the last 2 weeks, really, you know, with 8 games in 13 days and all this travel in between games. It makes it really difficult to run practice if you want to have energy for the games. And I think it's funny, you know, like I've heard Pacioretty say on a number of occasions, we do the same thing every practice. It's not going to affect us all that much. But the one guy who it would affect, especially when he's struggling, is a guy like Carey Price. So I think, you know, you saw the benefits of that in the game against Detroit. It didn't work out in his favor because the team in front of him couldn't manage a goal. And that's just sometimes the way it crumbles.
What kind of a routine could players have for a 3 o'clock game in the afternoon?
None. Like, it's a challenge. And some guys will say, and I heard Jason York say this on the broadcast, and I kind of agreed with it. And he's certainly been there. He's had that perspective. He's played in the National Hockey League. Sometimes it just takes the anxiety out of the situation. You know, you wake up, you have breakfast, and you go play. There's no waiting period. There's no forced kind of nap time, which works for some guys, but some guys don't like to use it. They can't sleep before a game, and the anxiety builds up. So the one thing is that there's no uniformity to it, right? Like what works for one guy doesn't necessarily work for another guy who absolutely is a creature of habit and needs that routine, and it's broken on a day like this. So I'm not sure that fully contributed to what we saw on the ice today, which was a fairly pedestrian, boring hockey game. I just think, you know, one way or the other, that was the way that game played out, and it's a defensive game between divisional rivals, and Detroit played virtually the only way they can to slow down and beat a team like the Canadiens. And I thought the Canadiens looked a little bit small. Like, they have a small roster up front, and they looked a little bit small next to those 6 foot and over defensemen of Detroit, because they didn't want to really get physically implicated the way we've seen them do throughout this season.
I want you to know, during your answer, okay, the Penguins and the Capitals scored 3 more goals. Seriously. It's 6-5. Well,
In
one of the and they're not even done the second period. 3-0, 5-3, 5-5, 6-5. This is insane what's going on here.
8 goals in the last 11 minutes.
8 goals in 11 minutes, you know?
And you know what? We know those games are playing out that way. And, like, we saw the same thing with Montreal last week in Winnipeg and Montreal against the Rangers on Saturday. Those games are playing out right now the way they are because of the time of year. It's just like, it's so inconsistent what a team can offer night to night in the dead of January.
In this condensed schedule.
Halfway through a schedule, and like, psychologically, you're saying to yourself, we've got 40 more games to play at a pretty high level before the real fun begins, and that, you know, is a war in itself. So that's what you get as a product. And I'll bet you anything, Elliot, as we move further along here and we get down to 20 games left in the season, those scores and those games are going to look a lot like what we saw between Detroit and Montreal today. And I'm sorry if that hurts anybody.
No.
It hurts me. And I like watching games like what's going on.
You know? Yeah. Well, that was terrible. I didn't even watch the game.
You didn't miss much.
The only game I missed this year. Go.
Eric, you talked about Carey Price before, maybe getting the rest look. He bounced back today. Great game. But his recent struggles have been obviously well documented. Do you see this as just a bump in the road? Because we know what Carey Price has done the last few years. He's clearly the best goalie in the league. Or is this really a legitimate concern the way he's been playing recently?
No, it's a bump in the road. And, you know, recently turns into some positive momentum in the opposite direction. And, you know, no, like, you have to look at the entire body of work to come up with the right answer to a question like that. And, like, the entire body of work with Carey Price, when you look over the last 4 years of dominant hockey, you're not going to take the other side of the equation and say something's really wrong and it's trending in the wrong direction. It's a slump. We haven't seen him have one in years. So, you know, he's got to live through it, but all of a sudden, he puts up a good performance. Yes, he only faced 20 shots against Detroit, but he made several quality saves in that game. He had a breakaway save on Athanasiou in the first period. That guy's on fire for Detroit. He had a save on DeKaiser in the second period, a save on Vanek in the second period. Like, if it wasn't for Carey Price, that game would have had a different complexion to it. Detroit, you know, was the far better team in the first period of the game. So, like, he'll build off of that. So to argue like that there's something more to it, you know, when you look at the entire body of work, I know Michel Therrien is not concerned about Price. I wouldn't expect him to say anything different. I know Carey Price is not worried about Price, and I don't see a logical reason why I should be worried about Carey Price, because that's, you know, he's been the best goalie in the world for long enough that we know that something like this is a bump in the road for him.
And I think it must be said, if Eric Engels isn't going to worry about Carey Price, I'm not going to worry about Carey Price. Now, I'm worried about Michael McCarron. Now, I'm today's game, right? I mean, Jacob DeLaRose, and somebody said Jacob DeLaRose didn't play great today. And I'm thinking, when was that statement ever made? Since Jacob DeLaRose has been a Montreal Canadian, that somebody said Jacob DeLaRose played great today. Seriously, why is he in the National Hockey League?
Well, there was a point in time where Coach Therrien was comparing him to Jordan Staal, and having Jordan Staal back in the day. When I look at Jacob DeLaRose, I see a player that skates exceptionally well and does nothing else particularly well.
Excellent!
So, you know, like, is he a body that can certainly serve a role on the penalty kill?
No, yes. Ice capades! Ice capades! He's a good skater!
Yeah, he's a good skater. That's pretty much where it ends. The offensive potential isn't there. They knew it wasn't going to be. He's smart on the defensive side of the puck. You know, the bigger issue is McCarron. People are going to be concerned about seeing him go back to the ice caps after this game. And for me, it's like McCarron is and has been referred to as a project for a long time. where is he along the curve, that learning curve? He's way ahead of where they thought he would be when they drafted him as a 6'6" guy who's 220 pounds, closer to 230 at his heaviest. And these guys, you know, like I spoke to Marty LaPlante last week, who runs development for the Canadians, and his exact words were, he's still a baby in a man's body. Like, it's, you have to reach a certain age level where that strength, that man strength kicks in, and he's not there yet. And when he does get there with all the other development that he's done so far, he's going to be a very solid player. He's going to fit in that middle six, exactly where the Canadians want him to be when he turns out at his top end. And I think the Canadians are really happy with where he's come. They're really happy with the sacrifices he's made to lose weight and become a little bit more explosive on the ice. And when the strength kicks in and gets into that big frame of his, you're going to see more power out of him. You're going to see him win more puck battles. And there's nothing wrong with him going back to the minors after, you know, a 10-game stint or however long it's been with the Canadians, and developing, you know, that awareness on the ice so that next time he comes back, he's even further along the curve.
Andrew Shaw returned to the lineup Saturday just over 5 minutes before being thrown out of the game for his hit on Jesper Fast. What did you make of the hit? Obviously, no suspension. We know that. But when you saw it, what did you make of it?
It's a late hit. Nothing else. Like, it's a late hit. You can call it a cheap shot because it's a late hit. Like, let's talk about how late it is. The NHL wants you to be at a maximum of 0.6 seconds after somebody's released the puck. Yeah. He was at 0.9. So, you know, you could analyze that in slow motion and say, geez, that's a really long time. But we're talking about 0.3 seconds difference between, you know, the maximum allowance on a hit and him getting rid of the puck. So at full speed, he targeted a player for a hit. The player got rid of the puck a little bit earlier than he was going to be able to deliver it. And he decided to still deliver it.
Right.
And that, you know, in itself generated the response. Once the player's injured on the play, it's automatic that he's thrown out of the game. Once you've assessed that you're going to give him a 5-minute penalty because the player was injured on the play, then you have to throw him out of the game. I didn't think that hit deserved anything more, and obviously the NHL agreed.
Thank you, Eric. Always a pleasure. Have a great week.
Yep, guys. Take care.
Eric Engels, Sportsnet, Sportsnet Radio, Sportsnet Television, The Triple Threat. Eric Engels. And I think that I kind of disagree a little bit with Eric. He got thrown out because they thought it was a headshot. That's why he got thrown out. Not because the guy was hurt.
It looks like it when you watch it quick, what? Right? I saw it quick. I thought, wow, that's dirty.
So you have no choice. For the naked eye, it's just like those fractions of an offside. Seriously? You know?
It's so hard.
I know.
You should be able to review it on a throw-out play, right? Go review it. I will say this, completely dirty play in the sense that you're trying to hit it, but that's his job.
But they did review it, and he didn't get suspended.
No, I mean, if you're the other team, be upset that he went with the hit, but that's not, he's done worse, other guys have done worse. It's just because it's him and of the history he's had that it was made such a big thing, I believe.
Todd Olushko is back from Vegas. Is he tired? Everyone else is tired in the National Hockey League, and how does that affect you? We'll find out. He's a former National Hockey Leaguer and Olympian. He's up next to talk about that and the Leafs. Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price.
The alleged show.
Hi, Elliot
Price.
This is going to be a shame.
Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price.
That's baloney.
Horse hockey.
Ladies and gentlemen, wake the kids, phone the neighbors.
You don't scare me. I got chunks of guys like you in my stool.
Price. You want to touch my monkey?
We papa.
Yes.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
The sportos, they all adore him. They think he's a righteous dude.
Elliot. Good luck, showboy.
Wow. All right, let's take a breath. From the Washington-Pittsburgh game, 6-5 after two periods of play. Apparently, what would you say the record is for most goals in one National Hockey League?
19.
Nope. 21.
Ah, close enough. I'll take that.
21.
When
was
that?
We've got is 11. I don't know. It's probably Oilers and somebody. You know, Oilers and Kings. Back with the Gretzky and the...
That's and a the lot of
Marcel
goals in a game.
Marcel Dion line once upon a time. That is a lot of goals. 11 goals in this day and age after two periods.
What I like is there's probably someone out there that on the 1-0 game today was like, oh, this is why the NHL needs to change the pads. There's not enough goal scoring in the league.
Right, you need bigger
change
nets.
Everything. And then you're watching this game, and there's 11 in two periods. So
bigger nets.
Why? You still see it sometimes.
Bigger
I'm
nets.
I'm fine with the scoring.
Todd Ilyushko
right
would have been a 50-goal scorer. Do you know how many times he came this close?
We'll ask him.
Todd, how are you?
I'm doing well, boys. How about you? You guys are talking about goals right now. I'll tell you who's not worried about getting bigger nets. It's the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I'm going to give you a little bit of a stat. Especially in the first period,
yeah.
These guys have scored 49 goals so far this season, and this is 49 first period goals this season. And last year, they scored a total of 48 first period goals the entire season.
No.
41 games to go.
They did not.
The Leafs don't need bigger nets.
I couldn't agree more. Look, you look at the Leafs last year.
Actually, they need smaller nets in the third period is what they
hey.
Need.
Just, oh, even
yeah,
with
well,
those
in their own end. Yeah, yeah. Right.
In their own end. But I agree with you. Look, watching the Leafs this year, I'm not saying everything's fixed yet, but I get... Every time I would start watching a game, I expect to have to come back in the past. You know, it's Leafs are going to get scored on in the first minute or the first five and then try to claw their way back in. But this year, every game I'm watching recently, I almost expect the Leafs to get a big goal and start off with the lead. I agree with you. They've been great in the first.
Well, that's been their ammo so far this season right now, is getting the lead early and then adding to it. I mean, last year, if they did get a lead, it would be diminished by the end of the first period. They wouldn't be able to add on to it. And now it's like, I don't know what's happened. I mean, we don't know what's happened. They've got some young players in there. They get a unbelievable draft pick in Austin Matthews. They get surprised by having a guy like Mitch Marner who's lighting it up. And then they're getting contributions from depth players like Connor Brown, Zach Hyman. And then add to the mix, the veteran players have kind of, a resurgence season. I wouldn't say that. I mean, a guy like JVR who got hurt at the end of the year, we didn't know how he was going to respond early in the season. He's been fantastic. Dazem Kadri's found his game. The back end, which is probably their Achilles heel right now, as of late has been playing, you know, great hockey right now. So you've got everything. The only thing about Toronto right now you got to be careful about is, and in Toronto, it's hard not to look through rose-colored glasses with the fans here. They think that it's the greatest thing ever right now. We're going to go to the playoffs and win the Stanley Cup. There's 41 games to go. The first 41 games for the Toronto Maple Leafs probably couldn't have gone any better than they have. So I'm looking at, I don't want to be pessimistic, but I'm expecting a little bit of a drop-off, and I may be completely wrong. That may not happen because this Leafs team, the rookies, everyone involved has been playing some inspired hockey, and you would think that the learning curve is over, and now they're just going to excel and keep going. But I don't know. It's going to be a tough second half, but right now the Leafs are third in the Atlantic Division, and every Leaf fan in Toronto would take that right now.
All right, there's always the fear that young players will hit a wall somewhere along the way, as if they don't play that many games in junior and in the American Hockey League. You know, like all of a sudden they're playing a lot of games.
I get a kick out of that too. I mean, you hear that all the time that there's a big grind for these guys, 82 games. Well, the last time I remember when I was playing junior hockey, there's more games now.
Yeah.
I ended up playing around 80 to 90 games a season. So I get it. And for me, I'm looking at young guys with young legs right now. Shouldn't it be the opposite? Shouldn't the old guys get burnt out and wind down a little bit? And the young guys are the ones should be able to handle the grind. They're younger. They're more in shape. They're excited about coming to the rink every day. So, yeah, I agree with you 100% that shouldn't be an issue for the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think this team is built for the long, long grind of an NHL season because of the youth that they have.
Todd Ilyushko joins us every Monday night at this time. What were you doing in Vegas?
Well, I had to do a little bit of recon out there and check out what the T-Mobile Arena was all about, see the area, you know, a bit of an excuse to maybe build in a business trip out there.
Okay.
Had a little bit of fun, but man, oh man, was it ever nice to get out there to see what that is going to be out in Las Vegas. It is an absolutely gorgeous area. The rink, obviously, is set between the New York and the Monte Carlo. You step out of the casino, you're right at the rink, and there's a beautiful little, cul-de-sac or courtyard area where they're going to be having, tailgate parties. I'll tell you what, that city's ready for an NHL team, and I think the NHL is ready for Las Vegas.
How close to the nearest golf course?
You got to get in a cab and you're about 5 minutes.
Yeah, so that's just all up right.
The street. There, well, there's a golf course behind the Bellagio, so you're all set. It's just down the strip. You know what? Everything is so close in Vegas. There's everything to do. But I'll tell you what, I'm excited. I think that everyone is going to buy in to that Las Vegas team. And, I mean, they obviously have to build some sort of a competitive team right on the hop, and that's going to be up to George McPhee to pick the right guys in the expansion draft.
Okay, it certainly seems as though the Oakland Raiders are on their way there. How does this jive with the NHL wanting to be the first team in there? And it looks like they're, kind of going to sort of be there at the same time.
Well, no, I know we talked about that. There was a bunch of people. I talked to some locals out there and discussing that with them. I mean, I'm thinking that the Raiders are going to come out. Is what's going to happen when, football comes? I mean, number one thing is you're going to try not to schedule any Sunday games in Vegas. That's for sure. Yeah. The NHL, that is. And then the second thing, and this is the biggest thing. And I talked to a lot of the people there. They have to be able to be competitive out of the blocks. I mean, if they're not going to be competitive, it's going to be tough to have these guys come out and support a team that's going to be losing and, typically be what an expansion team is. So it puts a little bit more pressure on Las Vegas ownership and general managers to build a quality team and a winning team as quickly as possible because, as you know, Las Vegas is going to be a big, nice, shiny new toy for people to go see. But I think in order to keep their interest and keep them engaged the whole time, they better put a competitive team in right off the hop. And I know it's going to be difficult, but I mean, there may have to be a little bit of moves in there. I think this is going to be a unique situation where it's not all about taking time and building for the draft. You have to build a competitive team in Vegas early and quickly if you want to keep the interest, especially if there's going to be other major sports teams coming into town like the Oakland Raiders. I'm also hearing about the NBA's really in serious talks about getting a team there. So get out of the gates quickly, get that fan base excited, and try to hold on to them so they don't spread their money elsewhere going to other sports.
Todd Alushko, thank you so much. Nice to have you back.
All right, boys. Have a great night.
All right. Todd Alushko, former NHLer and Olympian. He got to go to Vegas to make sure everything was going okay. My kind of job. Where are you sending me, Grant?
Where am I sending you?
Yeah. I was going to send you, I tell you now, I was going to send you to NFC Championship game and the Super Bowl if the Cowboys had made it, but I'm sorry.
I had made a deal.
I'm sorry.
Well, the good news is, and here it is, okay, now it was
a cheap deal.
On my part, I'll admit, but the Cowboys are already clawed back. So I said, if they win this game, I will accept that the Leafs can make the playoffs, and no matter what, they cannot win the Stanley Cup, no matter what, for this year.
But that's off now. All bets are off now.
So now the Cowboys lost.
I told you.
It's a Stanley Cup.
I made a vow with whatever powers are out there. Now, I've been waiting 50 years for a Stanley Cup, right? That if the Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup, I would agree to have a whole year of bad golf. And I swear, sure enough, Blackhawks win the Cup, and all of a sudden my golf game went to crap. But then a second year started, and I was still playing poorly. And as it turns out, I needed a second Stanley Cup to remove the curse. The third Stanley Cup was just gravy.
Yeah, how'd that affect
you? I got better. I got much better. I got two holes in one. But that took an extra 3 years. I don't know. Thanks to Todd Alushko. He'll be back next Monday. Although, if you really want to hear Todd, you can do that. All you have to do is tune in. Sportsnet 590, The Fan in Toronto. They're online. He's the co-host of Leafs Nation, if you're a Leafs fan. And they talk about other National Hockey League teams. National Football League talk. DK's handled the whole season, but I can't believe that there are 3 games left.
It's depressing. Let's not remind
then what? We're going to lose DK for the winter. Till like, and free agency just isn't the same in the NFL,
No, the draft is kind of that free agency,
but that's
right?
What? Like June?
April. So it's always usually my birthday weekend or the one before.
Daniel Kalis coming up to talk about the conference championships. After Grant's update, this is CFMB 1280 AM Montreal Sportsnet Tonight.
You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price and Grant Robinson.
Rogers spins to his left. Comes underneath and
pass is incomplete, out of bounds. Now they say complete. The official, the second one, came in and overruled the other, Jared Cook, and with 3 seconds left, the Packers are going to have a chance to win it.
That is unbelievable.
Unbelievable. The first official came down the sideline and said incomplete. The official from behind the play said the catch was good, and he was right.
Wow, Jared Cook, he knows where he is, and he's able to keep his feet in, and the throw that Rodgers is able to make, moving to his left.
Unbelievable, 36 yards on third and 20.
You know, we've made those throws before in practice, so it's a matter of trusting your muscle memory and your training and thinking about a positive picture when you're breaking the huddle and then executing the right way. A little too much time on the clock. You know, we got a good repertoire of plays for the end of the game, whether it's obviously the well-publicized Hail Marys or the other plays we've hit over the years to kind of draw from and just kind of pick that one out. And we executed well. The most important part of the game. Extra special tonight for Mace to hit those two kicks. I mean, he's the best kicker in the league, and he's got to do it outdoors for much of the season on a tough field at times, and he's so reliable for us. I know he's made a bunch in a row in the playoffs. It's just incredible.
Now it's a 51-yard try to win it, but a timeout is taken before the kick. This to send the Packers into the NFC Championship game. It is
Well, there you go. I tell you what, when I'm watching the broadcast, I did not hear him say good until way later. If someone edited that, or did I miss it? Because it just snuck in on the left side of the post, and it looked like it was bending left, and it kind of hooked a little bit back in and ended up being good. And
the other one was just, I think the other one was closer to a miss on the right, so...
Daniel Kalis, all season long, our NFL correspondent. Quite a Sunday, Daniel, in the National Football League after really six, so-so games to start things off. Four games in the wild card weekend, and then Saturday in this one.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, we were hoping for these big games. Everyone was talking about the Green Bay, Dallas game, and then the Pittsburgh KC game, hoping they would come up after the other games weren't so good. And boy, did they deliver. These games were just awesome. Unfortunately for Grant's team, he wasn't on the right end, but it was just some awesome football. It was enjoyable to watch and not have to be stressed with my team, playing in the game.
Maybe you guys could get together and have a pin-sticking Aaron Rodgers party, huh?
I want him to win now, so I can't. I told you.
I want him to win, but only if he takes out, like, someone has to take out the Patriots. Who do I like? Can they both lose? No. Steelers and the Patriots both can't lose. But we're ahead of ourselves. This was a remarkable football game, and you never, never, ever, never, ever leave time on the clock for Aaron Rodgers. He just said so. How painful is that?
Yeah, they'll question the fact of whether they should have spiked the ball or not. They had the timeout to go, and it seemed, in hindsight, that they should have probably not spiked the ball and let the clock run down a little bit more, maybe run on third down, run Ezekiel Elliott, so the clock runs down and they kick the field goal and don't give it back to him. But that's football. Weird things happen. The week before, when Jared Cook dropped that catch right before the half, that gave Aaron Rodgers a chance for the Hail Mary. So, one thing happens, it leads to another thing, and they gave Aaron Rodgers just enough time to get them into field goal range.
I still think spiking it was the right decision, because you're not trying to tie the game. You're trying to win it at this point. Because let's say it does go to overtime and Aaron Rodgers wins the coin toss. What's stopping him from going out and putting up seven to win? What I didn't like was third and three, you have a timeout. I told this to Elliott. Run the ball with Ezekiel Elliott. He either gets the first down, then you spike it again, or it gets you a little bit, 2 yards closer for Dan Bailey. Let the clock run down, then call your last timeout. Again, as soon as it happened, I knew it was a chance. The Cowboys showed up. I got a question not about the Cowboys or the Packers, more about a player. And you'll know this because your favorite team, there's one player criticized more than anybody, and that's Odell Beckham Jr. And I compared a lot to how Dez Bryant was treated in the media a few years ago. And now he gets a real hard time. You talk about Ezekiel Elliott. You talk about Dak Prescott. And I heard all year, Dez Bryant is expendable. He's not a number one, and he doesn't deserve to be there. Down 21-3. Did you see the Cowboys' faces on the sideline, either of you? Did you guys see what the sideline was like? I didn't see Dak Prescott going up and telling people, hey, you know, we're going to get it. I saw Dez Bryant walking up to players, telling them, keep your head up. We're going to go out. We're going to score. Or even in the fourth when they made it 15 points again, he goes up to Sean Lee, consoles him. To me, I saw a real leader off the field there, and he gets the criticized for that. But on the field, he really showed up. I don't know. Did you see any of that from him? And do you think he's an essential part to the Cowboys' future?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, you saw he scored his first two career playoff touchdowns. You know, we all think he scored one a couple of years ago they stole from him.
there you go.
But, you know, he was great in this game when he needed to. He made the big plays, and that's what you need from a guy. He stepped up when he needed to do. You know, it wasn't like I can't see anything else that he could have done for the team. And a team that's run by a rookie quarterback and a rookie running back, they need their superstar receiver to be there to take some pressure off them, and he did. There was no griping all season. There was no complaining by him that he wasn't, like you said, getting any of the press. You know, I give my hats off to him for, you know, he did have some injuries and it wasn't his best season, but there was no issues off the field with him, no complaining. He was a good soldier, and he went out there and he did everything he could yesterday. The Cowboys left it all on the field.
All right, it's not only Andy Reid. It has been the history of the Kansas City football team for quite a while. They will find a way. The biggest play of the game was a play that wasn't a play.
The two-point conversion.
Yeah, hang on a second.
Yeah,
hang on.
Look, they called a holding on it. I've seen the replay like everyone else has a number of times. I never want to see a game decided on a penalty, but unfortunately it was a penalty. He did hold him, or he did bring him down, and that's unfortunate. But KC's offense wasn't doing anything all game, and they left themselves a lot of chances. They took other unsportsmanlike penalties. They were shooting themselves in the foot all game, and, you know, you beat yourself to a two-point conversion. That's what's going to happen.
Looks left. He throws. Caught with the two-point conversion with a flag. Demetrius Harris makes the catch. He got a penalty, though.
Holding. Number 72 offense. 10-yard penalty. The try will be attempted on the 12-yard line.
Eric Fisher is 6'7". James Harrison maybe 6 feet. He dips underneath, and watch what Eric Fisher does. He gets him hooked around the shoulder pads, a little grab, the official's right there, and those 2 points come off the board.
Listen, compliments to the Steelers. They were the better team today. We had too many errors that we made. It's my responsibility to make sure those are right, and we didn't do it. I'm still, you got to see what our football team's all about, the grit, and we came up short. So, but they laid it all out there. We can learn from this. I know that's hard to hear right now, but we can learn from it and be better for it next year. So that's the suddenness of this, of the playoffs. It's ended, and we move on.
Pittsburgh, look, no touchdowns at all, 6 field goals, but you go on the road against a very good defensive team, and Pittsburgh drove the ball pretty effortlessly.
Six field goals they got into.
And they could have had a bunch of touchdowns, right? I mean, they kept stalling there. My question here, look, I know Big Ben, people are going to talk about he's one game away from having a chance at winning his third Super Bowl. He's a better quarterback now than he's ever been. Antonio Brown might be the best receiver in the league. I want to talk about Le'Veon Bell, because 170 yards this week, 167 yards last week. You know, everybody's talking about the quarterbacks, Rodgers, Brady, Matt Ryan. Could Le'Veon Bell be the MVP of the playoffs right now?
I think if Le'Veon Bell was not suspended beginning of the season, he would be in the discussion for MVP of the regular season. The way he came on, he was unbelievable. And in his first two playoff games that he's ever had, he's breaking Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, rushing records. It's Franco Harris, Jerome Bettis. It's not Sosa that he's passing. This guy is unbelievable to watch. What he does behind the line of scrimmage, he's so patient. He sees the hole, he waits for it. You know, plus the added fact that he's unbelievable catching the ball out of the backfield. I think he's the real engine. The last couple of years, they missed him in the playoffs, and they just came up short getting to the Super Bowl a couple of those times. I think he's the difference maker, because like you said, Big Ben is great. There's no debating that. This guy's on a Hall of Fame way. I think Antonio Brown is the best receiver in the league. But Le'Veon Bell, I think, you know, no disrespect to Ezekiel Elliott, I think Le'Veon Bell is the best running back in the league, and he's just so dynamic back there.
All right.
Well, I was going to say, Alex Smith, just quick, 150 yards through three quarters. He threw for under 100 yards to receivers the entire game again. Can you see this guy being the quarterback of a Super Bowl winning team? Yes or no?
No. I do not. I just don't. I don't want to put it on him. The offense just wasn't moving at all. But I don't see him as a guy who can take a team over the hump. Yeah, he could probably win a game here or there, but I just don't think he can win two or three playoff games in a row to win a Super Bowl.
Good. Leave him in Kansas City, and you, no more talk about Tony Romo in Denver.
It's happening, okay? I'm telling you.
He's going to be a New York Jet, so you stop it right now. All right. Pittsburgh Steelers, you know what? If the New England Patriots play against Pittsburgh like they played against Houston, they'll lose, and Tom Brady knows that.
You add our poor execution on top of that, and then you add our turnovers on top of that. You know, it just, you know, it doesn't feel great because, you know, we work pretty hard to, you know, play a lot better than we played. So I give them a lot of credit, but, you know, we're going to have to play better on offense, and, you know, we expect to go out and have a good week, try to fix the things that, you know, we saw tonight, and then, you know, try to play better next weekend.
He knows. He knows the Patriots were lucky that they were playing Houston on Saturday, because if they played a really good team on Saturday and played the way that they did, they would have lost.
Almost definitely. He made a couple bad interceptions, but they were playing, you know, the top defense in the league, and they're not playing that this week. I think we're going to see a completely different game coming up, more of a shootout, a lot more scoring. I don't think Pittsburgh is going to stall six times and get six field goals. So I think they're going to be putting some touchdowns on the board. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. There's going to be a lot of points scored, and the Patriots are going to have to play a lot cleaner of a game to come out of this and go into the next Super Bowl.
Houston Texans, just to add to this, I mentioned this to Elliot earlier, three turnovers, they had the goal line stand, first and goal at the one, you stop Tom Brady, who's probably the best sneak quarterback in the NFL, LeGarrette Blount led the league in touchdowns, they are impossible to stop, you stop them there, I count that as almost a turnover. And you had three drives start at their 34-yard line, the New England 12, and the New England 35, I think. You got 13 points off those. Only 3 points the rest of the game, and you trailed the whole time. Obviously, the problem here, because Lamar Miller ran fine. Brock Osweiler could not move the ball. I know Will Fuller dropped a touchdown, but that was kind of the game was already done. What do they do to fix this quarterback situation? Because I really think with a quarterback, and I'm not even talking an Aaron Rodgers, you know, I'm not talking about elite. I'm saying with a good quarterback,
Tony Romo!
I think
he's going everywhere.
He's going to need somebody that good. Maybe
five games for each team next year.
But with a quarterback, I really think the Patriots aren't playing this week. If the Houston Texans got good quarterback play last week, so what do they do to fix this? What are their options?
Yeah, unfortunately for Texans and Texans fans, that's been the question over the last number of years, because their defense is always, you know, one of the tops in the league. I don't know what to do, because they owe this guy a lot of money. They're not cutting him after this year. The problem is a little bit in the mechanics. Everyone sees it. He's got a really, really, it takes him a long time to get the ball out. And that's a problem. I mean, yeah, there was that one drop, and I think that could have made a bit of a difference in the game. But for the most part, if he's not getting into the receivers when he needs to, and he's got talented receivers, so they've got to fix his mechanics, which is not always the easiest thing to do, or they, you know, they've got to start looking at maybe bringing in a veteran to compete with him, Tony Romo, like you guys said. But, I mean, I think we all saw it. This guy looked really, really bad this year, and it did not get any better throughout the season. And he looked bad in all the games he played for Denver last year, but they masked it a little bit better. And that's why they went back to Peyton Manning, who was terrible before Brock. So he's really got to change some stuff in his mechanics, or I'm not sure this guy's going to have a long career.
Maybe Seattle has to make some changes. Raise your hand if you thought Matt Ryan and the Atlanta offense would pick apart Seattle's defense.
We just went where we should with the ball the entire day. When they played, you know, zone coverage and dropped their inside guys deep, we checked it down, and our running backs did a good job of getting yards, as many as we could in those situations. And then when they were in man-to-man coverage, I give our running backs, tight ends, wide receivers a lot of credit, because they beat some really good corners and tough guys to go against in man-to-man coverage. I thought they played really, really well. You know, I think we're all an extension of one another. I think when Julio gets going, it opens things up for other guys. When other guys get going, it opens things up for our running backs or Julio. So that's kind of been one of the coolest things about our offense and our team this year, is at different times during the game, different guys are going to step up and make plays.
Matt Ryan, and you'd have to say Atlanta was the last good team this year to earn everybody's respect. Heck, it might have taken beating Seattle to get people's respect.
I'm definitely my hands up on that one. I've been giving Matt Ryan and them a hard time because they seem to always falter over the last number of years when they needed to. They look great. You know, you throw for 300 yards, three touchdowns and no interceptions against Seattle, even without Earl Thomas. That's something, you know, that you can hang your hat on. It's impressive. They really look good, especially after Seattle came down that first drive. They really drove the field, took about 6-7 minutes off the clock. It looked like, okay, Seattle's going to, you know, run the ball. They're going to work the clock and all that. And then after that, it was over. Atlanta just took them apart. Matt Ryan looked great. They got the running game. And it's their defense. Their defense has really picked up with the second-year man, Vic Beasley. They're going to have a tough time. It's going to be a great rematch from earlier in the season against Green Bay. I think we're going to see a lot of points. It'd be interesting to see if Jordy Nelson gets back on the field. But it should be a really great matchup.
Who do you like now? Look, I'm early week.
It's a little
week.
Early. We're still dealing with last week.
Fine. Without going there,
yeah.
I won't ask that. This is
he's got Thursday and Friday to work
about
on
this,
here.
Okay, nobody has talked about this. And look, I know how you watch college, you watch NFL. One player in my life watching that really stood out, Devin Hester, had a great career. I know he's kind of stuck around and he hasn't been the same as he was. But watching him this weekend, he had three or four game-changing type returns, and not just, okay, the seam's there, run. Like, breaking tackles, you know, out running guys to the corner. How nice was it to see that? And he said he's calling it quits. So do you think we'll ever see a returner like Devin Hester again with the way kick returns are getting taken out of the game?
I'm not sure that we will. Maybe, you know, Tyreek Hill on Kansas City. But it was great to watch. And you know what? It's like the Al Pacino line from Any Given Sunday. It's a game of inches. Earlier in that game, when he had that return that he went all the way, that was called back on a very close holding penalty. If they don't have that penalty, that changes the entire dynamic of the game. They go up by 10, you know, and it changes everything. But he was awesome to watch. It was fun to see him do that last one near the end of the game where he almost took it to the house. I've always, you know, enjoyed watching good returners back to the Deion days and Dow Green. They were a lot of fun to watch. And I don't like that they're taking out all the kick return. I understand for safety first, so I'm not going to, you know, stand against that. But I'm not sure that we're going to see a guy who's going to put over, you know, we'll see guys do a return here or there, but the consistency year after year, oh, it's going to be hard. He was something special.
Another guy I just got to mention return-wise, Dante Hall, the X-Factor. He was amazing to watch the moves he would do. Anybody who hasn't seen him, go watch that guy on YouTube. But you talked about game of inches, and I agree that Seattle was driving. They were in control of that game. That penalty, kind of then the safety by Russell Wilson, he doesn't even really try to get up. It was kind of like reach the ball out. That was the turning point in Dallas. Again, Dallas had a lot of them, but at the beginning of the game, they get that big first down, and then Bryce Butler, that 15-yard penalty for going in the huddle, and then it's unsportsmanlike conduct, 37-yard change, they end up punting. Green Bay never looked back kind of after that, so it's, you said it really is a game of inches, and, you know, momentum is huge, and you saw it in both.
No, baseball is the game of inches. This is every game can't be the game of inches.
They can all be games of inches, though. Not the game, but games of inches.
Ah!
You know? Gotcha. No, I didn't say the game.
Fair enough. We'll be inclusive here.
Very good. Great Sunday. And, you know, the NFL needed it, because 8 crappy games would not have been good with only 3 games left to play. So we certainly have a lot on our plate. Looking forward to next weekend and championship games. Classics. Huh? Pittsburgh, New England, Green Bay, and the Interlopers, the Atlanta Falcons. Great talking with you, DK.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy the week. We'll speak later on.
Dan Kalis. You believe what's going on in this Pittsburgh-Washington game? Washington just scored. By the way, great stat. Stat of the night. I got the stat of the night. The Washington Capitals had not allowed 6 goals in any game this season. The Washington Capitals had not allowed 6 goals in any game this season. They allowed 6 in the second period.
That's a good stat.
They allowed 6 in the second period. And, I mean, the pucks are just going in. You know what? This is part of the price Washington pays for lifting their goaltender. Carey Price wouldn't have come out, and he'd probably have a lead now. Although he did give up 7.
You never know.
No, but I mean, you know, you're not having, they're scoring on you, but it's not always the goaltender. You wanted a lift, and what happened is they scored 2 more after Washington took out Holtby.
Grubauer is good after seven, so it's means he's letting in five more. Seven. That means he's getting five more on him, so that wouldn't be good.
All right. I get you up to date, at least where things were a couple of hours ago, as far as Jose Bautista and the Blue Jays and what's going on. We've got, as usual, because it's been that kind of a week, it's always the next guy coming up with the opposite of what the last guy said. So from the Blair Show today, along with Stephen Brunt, it's Shai Davidi, who's the, I would say he's a top reporter for Sportsnet covering the Blue Jays. Latest on the Bautista affair. Is he? Ain't he? After Grant's update, this is Sportsnet Tonight, CFMB 1280 AM, Montreal. I'm Elliot Price.
C'est moi.
You're a bad man.
Elliot. I'm the guy.
You're a very bad man.
I'm hip. I'm with it.
Elliot.
I'm very important.
Well, I'm here to tell you that you're probably going to find out as you go out there that you're not going to amount to jack squat.
Sportsnet Tonight.
Weeknights at 8 p.m.
Oh! You know you can't bring that weak ass stuff up in this humpy bumpy.
Give and take. What can I do?
Welcome back. I'm Elliot Price. That's Grant Robinson. What a wild time it's been in Toronto. And again, look, we talked about it last week. People are freaking out as far as the Blue Jays are concerned. They didn't get Edwin Encarnacion. They added a bat. And what does this bat mean? I thought it was very interesting. I'm trying to think who it was. I think it was Kevin Pillar was talking about Kendrys Morales, saying, wait a minute right here. I know his stats are whatever, but he's coming to the American League East. He's going to hit in Toronto. He's going to hit in Boston. He's going to hit in Baltimore. He's going to hit in New York. And he's going to hit in Tampa Bay. He's not hitting in those parks against that pitching. He's hitting in these parks against this pitching. And Toronto's going to be his home park. It's a whole different animal. These are much better hitting ballparks. And so his numbers could change. Just saying.
It's a very good point.
But it has been a crazy week as far as the Jose Bautista rumors have been concerned. John Heyman from MLB.com joined the boys on the Blair Show last week, and he didn't think anything was about to happen there.
They hope he signed somewhere else is what I think is going on. And, they're monitoring the situation. I guess if they can get some kind of unbelievable deal, if he says to himself, well, I got all these business dealings in Toronto. I love playing there. I want to come back. Is it possible that they sign him back for something less than that 17-2, they're not going to pay more than the 17-2. I guess there's always that remote possibility, but I think they're going to play it out and hope for that draft choice.
But John, have you heard anything from anyone that would suggest that they want him back?
No.
Well, wrong. Apparently, he could still be right until Bautista actually puts his name on a contract, but it looks like they are interested, and it also looks like he's going to get more than the $17 million. Here's Mark Shapiro, who joined the same boys on Friday.
No, I mean, I would just say that, we clearly need a corner outfielder, right? And Jose is probably the most talented one out there as far as offensive production goes and pedigree and track record. And then on top of that, he's got a premium in this marketplace because of, what he's meant to this franchise over the last eight seasons and who he is in this market and the impact he's made in the community here. So you take all those things up, and for me not to say he would be a good alternative for us for next year would be a mistake. So, I mean, I think he's among the alternatives. He's certainly, if not the best, one of the best.
And, of course, so the news last night that Bautista and the Blue Jays are nearing a deal, and yet here we are almost 24 hours later, and there has been no announcement. Interview with Shai Davidi joining Sportsnet in just a moment. First to tell you that Washington and Pittsburgh are now tied at 7. I'm guessing, it's just a guess, that the Penguins are the first team in the NHL this year to blow a 7-5 lead. I'm guessing. I hope when
right.
We do
right.
National Hockey League Fantasy Update that this is your game, because this we got to leave a lot of time. This game in itself could take 5 minutes.
Okay, but you take the Habs high scoring affair then. Okay?
All right, I can do that.
I'll make that trade.
Shai Davidi joining the boys with Sportsnet this morning on the Blair Show with Blair and Brunt on Jose Bautista and an imminent deal with the Jays.
Sorting through the final details, trying to figure out which structure is going to make the most sense for them and how it's going to work. But it is a really intriguing contract on a number of levels for both sides. It hasn't been the offseason that either side has particularly wanted or hoped for. And now the seemingly bringing them back together. Sorting through the final details, trying to figure out which structure is going to make the most sense for them and how it's going to work. But it is a really intriguing contract on a number of levels for both sides. It hasn't been the offseason that either side has particularly wanted or hoped for. And now the seemingly bringing them back together.
And let's be honest here. I mean, without revealing sources or anything, the scuttlebutt around Toronto, and when I say scuttlebutt, people who are in the know, people who claim to have some sort of knowledge of how the Blue Jays and Bautista do business. Up until the middle of last week, you really got the sense, Shai, that there wasn't a great deal going on. In point of fact, any time a report came out, your initial reaction was almost to just say, well, this is Jose's agent, Jay Alou, trying to create a market where one may not exist or where one has been depressed. But it really does seem as if both sides have taken a step back and have looked at this, and I would almost say it's almost like they punted, to borrow a football analogy. It's almost like they punted in making a hard decision here.
Well, you know, if you look at it, I mean, you're right. I mean, the scuttlebutt has certainly been that. You know, I spoke to someone with some pretty good knowledge of the situation on Thursday, and they just said, look, he's not in their plans. And obviously something has changed. But this makes too much sense for both sides, right? I mean, Jose Bautista isn't going to be appreciated anywhere else as much as he is in Toronto. I mean, he has a sense of his place within the franchise history. I think he'd very much like to take a run at some of Carlos Delgado's career hitting numbers in terms of home runs and RBIs and things of that nature. You know, he wants a spot on that wall of excellence, and, you know, if he hasn't earned it already, which he very well might have. And if you look at this from the Blue Jays perspective, I mean, they're at the point where they're trying to extend their competitive window, and they need an impact guy. That competitive window right now looks to be at least 2 years. That's the time that you have Josh Donaldson for, and they're not going to be able to do better than Jose Bautista right now if you look at that market. I think they explored all their trade options, nothing presented itself, and now they're at the point where Jose Bautista was the right fit, and it seems like it could be for the right term.
And, you know, I think when Mark Shapiro talked to Stephen Brunt and myself on Friday, one of the things that I think was driven home is I asked him about possibly trading a Vladimir Guerrero Jr., for example, their top prospect for a player, whether it's Andrew McCutchen or whomever. And essentially, he said a little... He sounded a little bit like Jeff Weltman of the Raptors when he said, look, you still have to keep an eye on the long-term future as well as the immediate future. But he also kind of indicated that, you know, how did he word it exactly? He said, you probably don't make that move if you think you have a very long jump to get to a championship team. And I kind of took that to mean that the Jays were perhaps loath to move any of their minor league prospects until they see where they are at the trade deadline. And if they're in first place or, you know, secure in a wild card spot or in the wild card spot, whatever, then perhaps the equation changes a bit. But as we sit here right now in the winter, I think the organization wants to keep its young players and its young pitchers.
Well, I think the other thing you have to look at is if you're trading away prospects for a player, how much better is that player than what you're going to get on the free agent market, right? And so if the gain isn't substantial enough and the control isn't substantial enough, then why would you give up assets when you can replicate similar production for nothing but money in free agency? So I mean, that's a big part of the equation here too, right, is that if
you know, they looked at guys like Andrew McCutchen and Charlie Blackman, and before it was traded Adam Eaton, and a lot of the guys who got moved, you know, even to some degree Seth Smith and Jarrad Dyson, none of those things panned out. And so you're left with the decision, do we overpay in trade, or do we spend money in free agency? And I think when you get to that point, obviously you'd rather keep the assets, make the play in free agency, and then you have assets in July if you need, where you can reexamine your options.
Okay, Shai, you've I know that every article you've written in the Blue Jays this off season, every article has included a kind of a running tally of where the payroll is and how much they have to spend. So let's operate under the assumption that they come to an agreement with Marcus Stroman before they go to a hearing. Let's factoring all that in, the raises players are going to get. Let's give Jose Bautista $18 million this year. What does that leave Mark Shapiro in terms of wiggle room? How much money does he have left?
Well, in guarantees, it's only a 300K swing on Stroman between ask and offer.
Right.
So you're looking at about, the Blue Jays are sitting at about $132 million in guarantees. Then you have to factor in about $5 million for zero to three guys. So you're looking at about $137 million, and if Jose's at 18, then that's about $155 million. And if they're about $160 million, it leaves them $5 million to play with. So, clearly, they're going to be taking or shopping a little bit in lower or value aisles for a backup catcher and a left-handed reliever. That would figure the bulk of the money would go to the left-hander, with a little bit being spent on backup catcher. I think the one-year $1.5 million deal for Chris Iannetta from the Diamondbacks really set the market for the backup catchers and for the guys that are left. So, that's where they're going to, probably the Rangers are going to spend on the backup catcher, with the rest going to a lefty.
And what do you think this does for the possibility of bringing in, let's say, a Brandon Moss, adding another left-handed bat to the lineup?
Well, I don't think at this point that they'd have the room or from a roster perspective or from payroll to bring in another such player. I think the decision, the debate, the inner debate that the Blue Jays were having was, do you get like someone like a Moss or a Michael Saunders, and then perhaps another platoon, a platoon partner, and then spread the wealth around, and then spend a little bit more on your left-handed reliever, or whatever the case is. But clearly, the Blue Jays have decided that Bautista is the guy who's going to give them the most impact for their buck, and that appears to be the way things are trending right now.
All right, Jose Bautista has a lot of baggage. Some of it, let's face it, baggage both ways, good and bad. And, I don't think that's telling tales out of school, and I know the fans who are Jose Bautista fans are tired of hearing that, but, the fact of the matter is, he is, shall we say, a challenging personality. How do you think this move will be greeted in the clubhouse and in the manager's office?
I don't think it's going to be a problem at all. I think guys will probably be excited about it at this point, because they weren't going to do better than Jose Bautista. And I've spoken with quite a few executives who think that Jose Bautista has a really big year in him coming up. And if you get that Jose Bautista who can really dominate the game, even if he's just slightly better than what he was last year, you're getting an impact guy, and you can't challenge that production. And this is a group that is in its win now window. They need his production, and so I think they're going to be happy, because I don't think there are a lot of guys who are going to be able to give you what Jose should be able to deliver in 2017.
Let me throw this out there. We know that at least in some of the early discussions Jay Alou had with teams, that one of his selling points was that Jose would be willing to maybe move out of the outfield, not just DH, but perhaps play a bit of first base, but perhaps play a little bit of third base. They talked to to at least a couple of National League teams about that. And I don't know if I'd say they tried to market him as kind of a Ben Zobrist type player, because they don't exactly profile the same. But the idea was that you would be getting a guy who didn't absolutely need to be your right fielder on an everyday basis, that perhaps he would be amenable to moving. So I look at the Blue Jays right now. Look at their first base situation. I think it's safe to say Kenrys Morales is the everyday DH. Shai, do you see any way, at all that Jose Bautista ends up being, let's say, the everyday first baseman in this team, and that Steve Pierce goes to the outfield, or that there is somebody else in the outfield? And I understand for that to happen, you would probably have to put a deal together for Justin Smoke.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a lot of moving parts that have to happen there. And really, the need right now is in the outfield. It's not so much at first base. And, you know, who's taking all those at-bats in the outfield, right? So, I mean, I can see some sort of combination of Pierce, Carrera, Upton in left field, and then Bautista in right, maybe, along with Kevin Pillar. And then, you know, Pierce slotting in at first base with Justin Smoke.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's probably the most likely scenario. I mean, once you get beyond next year, if it is a two-year deal that he's back for, I think at that point you can certainly start examining different options. But the other thing to keep in mind is that Steve Pierce is coming off surgery on his elbow, and you know, how much is he going to be able to throw? Is it going to be too much to ask for him to play the outfield on an everyday basis? And that certainly has to factor into your roster configuration.
Better team now than they were at the end of the season?
I don't know that. I mean, certainly they're different, and having some balance in the middle of the lineup in Kenrys Morales will help. And I had an interesting chat with Russell Martin Saturday at the Baseball Canada banquet, and he was making the point that it's really hard to hit 30 home runs in Kansas City. And Morales has played his whole career in bigger ballparks and AL West and AL Central. And he was wondering how much, you know, hitting in the American League East, not just at the Rogers Center, but also in all the other AL East parks, would spike his numbers. And so having a left-hander in there to balance out the lineup, there's some more flexibility with Pierce. I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting team, and a lot, I think, ultimately depends on whether there's still some upside in Aaron Sanchez and Marcus Stroman. And if those two guys take a step forward, then they could end up a better team than they were last year.
All right, Bautista taking the long way home. See, I told you I heard somebody say that about Kenrys Morales. It was Shai Davidi. Now you know. Okay, so there you go. That's what's going on with the Blue Jays. Find out what's going on with the National Hockey League. We need to leave some time just for this Capitals-Penguins game. National Hockey League fantasy update. And man, are there points. There are so many points that Lars Eller actually has two goals in this Washington-Pittsburgh game. We'll get to that in just a moment.
You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price.
Okay, actually, in this Washington-Pittsburgh game, I hear you knocking and everything goes in. So, our National Hockey League fantasy update. Grant, this may take some time, so take your time. 7-7. Kick it off, Washington-Pittsburgh.
Well, yeah, by the time I'm done, it'll probably be 8-7 for
one
of these
two. An eye on things.
It's going to be a Crosby game winner.
2-on-1 Penguins. Crosby near the net, and he does not score. Yes, he does.
Oh, my God. What'd I just say? I just said it's going to be a Crosby game winner by the end of this update. That's why you listen to Sportsnet Tonight.
That's right.
Because you get the live news here. So if that does count,
8-7.
Crosby will have two goals, two assists on the night. He was on a five-game scoreless drought, so that'll help. Malkin, three goals. He's got a hat trick, 11th of his career. He's got 49 points now, 1 point behind McDavid for the league lead, and Crosby has actually tied him right now because he's got 50. Sheary and Rust with a goal and an assist. Bonino with a goal as well. Schultz and Daly, three assists. Kessel, Hornqvist, Mata, and Gunsel with assists there. Matt Murray, seven goals against, but is going to get the win because they kept him in. So that'll work out there. Lars Eller tonight, leader for the Capitals, two goals, one shorthanded. TJ Oshie, a goal, two assists. Burakovsky with a goal and an assist. The other goal scorers, Conley, Backstrom, and Williams. Ovechkin and Niskanen, two assists each. Winnick, Chorny, Kuznetsov, Johansson, Schmidt, and Orlov with assists.
Right. You know what? I think Sherry's going to get the goal.
Just Sherry's going to get it?
I don't think Crosby ever touched it. He's in the crease, and Sherry, and it went off some Capitals, and they're both in the crease, and I don't even know if it's a good goal yet. Go ahead.
Well, either way, Holtby, five goals against on 26 shots, and that's for that. We'll let you know what happened with this there.
All right, let's see if I could do this Montreal-Detroit game. It was very busy. One goal, second period. Thomas Vanek does in his former team from DeKaiser and Nielsen. And Carey Price gets beaten by Jared Coro, your basic third-string goaltender, who, by the way, is now, I don't know if
five,
he was.
5-1-1.
Yeah, 5-1-1.
Yeah.
There you go. Detroit 1 and Montreal 0. Okay, you would be next.
Well, we don't have anything else. I'm just checking. I wanted to make sure.
That was it. That's what
Islanders 4, Boston 0. Nikolai Kuhlman, two goals there. My old favorite player. Jason Chimera.
Really?
Yeah, well, like my unsung hero on my team, right? The guy I liked.
Exactly,
put it that
your
way.
Favorite player. Though.
Kessel was my favorite. But Chimera, goal and assist. Bailey with a goal. Casey Cizikas, two assists. Lee and Pelech with assists there. Thomas Greiss, if you had him, you're pretty happy. 32 save shutout. And Tuukka Rask, three goals on 15 shots before being pulled there.
All right, I got Buffalo and Dallas. Dallas beats their former coach. No, Buffalo beats their former coach. That's right. Because Lindy Ruff is in Dallas. Sabres 4, Stars 1. What in heaven's name has happened to the Dallas Stars? They're 18-19-8. You know what? Buffalo's better. Tyler Ennis, his second, unassisted. Jake McCabe on the power play, unassisted. 2-0 Buffalo first period. Radek Fox from Erie Hoodler.
What did you just say to me?
Yeah, you got to be careful. You should listen. Jack Eichel is ninth on the power play from Reinhardt and Oposo. And then Eichel, his 10th. Why doesn't it say empty net? Was it not?
It was. Eichel did
came
get an
empty netter. Came in 1950. Goaltenders tonight, Lettinen and Leonard. They're probably right next to each other in the National Hockey League's history of goaltenders. LEH, come on. Who else could be there? Go ahead.
Tampa Bay 2, LA 1. Tyler Johnson with a goal. Brian Boyle got the game-winning goal. Drouin, Kucherov, and Witkowski with assists. Ben Bishop back healthy. There's two big games in a row for him. 31 saves on 32 shots. And Kyle Clifford with the unassisted goal and a fight in the game. I don't know if you want to call that the Kyle Clifford now from now on, but unassisted goal and a fight, I count that. That's something. Who would you name that after historically?
Gordie Howe. Who didn't have very many of those?
It's true. Oh, yeah, the goal assist in a fight.
Yeah, he didn't.
Didn't only have like eight or something crazy?
No. He didn't have eight. Maybe he had three. Seriously.
And they call it that. Ridiculous.
Well, in the day. a goal and assist for three different San Jose Sharks as they win. Is that over? It is. It was a 4 o'clock game. 5-2 over the Winnipeg Jets. There were some weird goals in this one, no?
Martin Jones went for the empty netter and
got scored on.
Yeah.
A swings and misses. All right, a goal and assist for Ward, Meyer, and Tierney for San Jose. Brett Burns also scored. Wow. How many for Brett Burns on a season?
A lot.
18.
Jeez.
18. That was on the power play. Unbelievable. Let's see. Anybody else with multiple points? No. Assist for Vlasic and Pavelski and Marlowe and Braun. And on the other side of the scorecard, Golden assist for Scheifele. He got the gift there. A goal for Morrissey. What, that's it?
That's it.
That's it.
Edmund, last game.
Hutchison and Jones, the goaltenders.
Last game, Edmonton 1, Arizona 0 after one period. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins with the goal. Eberle and Larson with the assist. We're done. Cam Talbot, it's five over. Saves.
We got to go. Goodbye.